Davis is probably lying, and Greta Garbo is probably crying, while Robert Taylor is locked in her dying embrace. Chico and Groucho and Chaplin and Lloyd are all super. Sweet Mickey Mouse, Shirley Temple, and dear Jackie
Let's
Cooper.
Let's go to the movies.
That's right. So we do have a brand new theme for this segment from the musical Annie. Let's go to the movies. So Big Kev, what do you reckon of your new theme?
I think it's great. I've always been thinking, you know what would be awesome for my segment? My own theme song.
Own theme song. You heard it here first. So what are we looking at this week?
So this week we're going to be looking at Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them.
Now, this Fantastic Beast, I must admit, I'm not a big Harry Potter fan. I haven't actually seen the last few movies. I don't have anything against it, but I sort of missed it. It was a little bit too young for me when the books originally came out. Sister was a big fan of them. So first off, could you actually explain to us how this film, Fantastic Beast and Where to Find Them, it fits with the Harry Potter chronology?
It's based on a textbook that Harry has to read in like his second or third year regarding these Fantastic Beasts. And by fantastic, it means as in fantasy beasts, not, oh my God, they're amazing beasts, which is what fantastic is usually used nowadays. It's based on this textbook. And around 2001, J.K. Rowling actually released this fictional textbook to support comic relief. And back then, like, I got my hands on this book, and it was a pretty ripping yarn. It was a pretty funny book, basically. Like, it was like an encyclopedia of all these animals that the fictional new Scamander researched back in the fictional 1920s, and then it has like little notes written by Harry and his friends, you know, sarcastic notes about the animals that he had personally encountered.
Okay.
And so, but yeah, like the book itself is a bit of a short read because it was only like just a small like fictional textbook. But it was still enjoyable overall.
So how do you transform a fake textbook into a film, which I would assume needs to have characters and plot and all those sort of elements?
Yeah, that thought actually came to my mind as well when I first heard the movie was coming out, because I still remembered back then when the movie was first announced that like it was based on a textbook. You know, how can you adapt a textbook? But what they did was it's like the making of the textbook, so to speak. So what he had to go through to find these animals, or in this case, make sure that the animals are kept safe when he's traveling around New York City.
Mm-hmm.
Because as he said, he wanted to protect these animals from one of the most dangerous animals in New York City, humans. And so, basically the film is about that, as well as finding a couple of really dangerous animals. One of them, it's a bit like Jurassic World, but with magic.
Okay.
So one specific animal is out on the loose and has been causing chaos around New York. And it's up to him and his friends to team up with the wizarding, like, police, so to speak, of New York City, and to track down the animal and then to capture it.
Mm. Well, I am a big fan of those ones that you mentioned there, Jurassic World and the like. I do like my sort of fantastic kind of creatures cropping up in literature and film. So tell us, what did this one do well? Did it do it quite well in the end?
I feel it was fantastic because it knew the tone of the Harry Potter films, but it kept to a sort of similar tone, but it kept things different enough for it to be a new experience. Because by the seventh Harry Potter film, we sort of knew what was going on. We knew the tone and the characters and so on. But here, like, completely different characters, but it still kept to the similar fantasy tone that the series was known for. And but I feel like was doing a really good job of trying not to tread on the same ground, but still trying to keep it different enough, but still familiar enough. You know that
feeling
as a writer, right? You know, where you have to try and make sure that stuff like is still familiar to the audience, but is something different, which is, I think, like something that sequels have to work with, like when they try and make things different. But anyway, this is a prequel because it's set like 7 years before the main series. Not only that, but like the characters and the actors in the film as well, can't complain about them. I think that they did it really well. And I think one of the benefits is that they actually hired actors that were already fans of the Harry Potter series. Mm-hmm. But because of the J.K. Rowling herself's little rule that the Harry Potter series had to have a majority of British actors, that meant that American actors who are also fans of the series got to miss out, basically. And so, like, with this series, now that the setting has moved to New York City, all of these American actors that are like, oh my god, yes, I love Harry Potter, I want to work on this film so badly, then they got the chance to work on the film as well. And it shows, because you know sometimes how actors, if they're acting in a series that they're a bit unfamiliar with, it can sort of be a bit different to how actors would act if they are like familiar with the source and like source material and so on, like with comic book movies and so on.
Mm-hmm.
Like these actors, they knew what they were on about. Like they knew like how to convincingly portray their characters because they're already fans of the series. And as well as that, J.K. Rowling, since she actually wrote the script for the movie, as well as like the general outline, so she knows about plotting as an author. She knows about how to write a good story that has a really good consistent pace to it, so there aren't like scenes that really drag down the speed of the film to like a slow, sluggish pace. Mm-hmm. So she knows how to keep things going, keep things interesting, keep things entertaining. Having an author of becoming a first-time scriptwriter does have its drawbacks, because I can sort of see how her writing style has influenced her script as well.
Mm-hmm.
So she went from, like, for example, like her style would be not to have characters. Like some authors do have characters that tend to go on tracks and tend to go on rants and go on a bit, or have like lengthy dialogue and so on. But she tended to keep her scenes sort of like short dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
But like also action scenes as well. But like I could tell, like in her mind, she'll go dialogue, then action, and then she would like write down what she wanted to happen in the action, like just how she would write the movie as a book, you know what mm-hmm. I mean? And so, but I feel like she needed to sort of try and change her little method on writing the story, because like it would go from dialogue and an action with no dialogue. So like an action, awesome action scene where no one said anything. Like there was one scene where there was no dialogue. It was just the main character making like rhino noises and chicken noises, which I felt like could have been enhanced with some dialogue with some of the characters that were witnessing this magnificent event, with mm-hmm. him just going around going trying to attract one of the creatures that had escaped and he was trying to recapture. But yeah, so like I feel like for the next film, because there's going to be another Fantastic Beasts film, she would have to work a bit better with her script, so that it's a bit more the script itself is good, but like I can just sort of tell how she is as a writer with how she wrote her script.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah, which is a bit unfortunate, because I was expecting something a bit more, like, more dialogue. I felt like it was a bit lacking in dialogue as well, because she would tend to focus on the action scenes as well, and how she would sort of imagine those coming onto the screen. Other than that, in the early parts of the film, the CGI was a bit iffy as well. Mm-hmm. I could tell that there are a couple of scenes done with obvious CGI, especially like when the main characters are exploring where the main character Newt keeps his animals when he's traveling around. He keeps them in his suitcase. Mm-hmm. All of the animals, he just literally stuffs inside his suitcase. It's basically like the TARDIS. It's bigger on the inside. So then you could go inside the suitcase and then have a look around. But like, I don't know why, it just felt really obvious that it was CGI. Like I could see the character, but you know how sometimes with green screens, how like it could sometimes reflect onto the actor.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I could see some sort of odd reflection, like the light from the character wasn't really matching the back, like the background. But like after, so I think that they may have been trying to save money earlier on in the film with the CGI. But like at the end of the film, the CGI was excellent.
Mm-hmm.
Like that was like really good CGI at the end. I don't want to spoil anything, because the ending, the finale of the movie, does look convincing. Like the animals flying around and the main bad guy attacking New York City. Also, it also was shown convincingly through CGI as well.
Mm-hmm.
But overall, I think that the movie was great. Mm-hmm. It was overall great, despite my little hesitations with JK's script and with the CGI being a bit mm-hmm. spotty as well. I think, like, with the next movie, it could potentially be even better.
Mm-hmm.
And... but yeah, like, I hope that, like, JK just, because this is her first script, so hopefully, like, she'll sort of understand the writing process, or maybe get some help or something, or maybe she'll just end up doing an even stronger script for the next film.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you very much, Kevin.